Okay, so it's going now? You got it. I know you hate it when I ask you that, and you've already pressed the button. And so it just feels my humor needs to ask you, if you press the button, is it going?
I thought it was awkward how we started last time. I was trying to prevent that this time, and you wanted to make it that way.
It's kind of weird how that happened, isn't it? Remember, the quality doesn't have to be anything above zero.
Again, we have here Paul Wheaton of Permes.com, RichSoil.com, and he now has Paul Wheaton. What is your blog website name?
Oh, right. I'm just using and abusing WordPress, I think. And you know what? It might change. There were some people that were saying I shouldn't put my blog there. And really, I was just putting it there so I could have a place to stick the podcast stuff. But it's that, I believe, if I remember correctly, it's paulwheaton12.wordpress.com.
I think. That's what I'm recalling, too. Again, we're doing a podcast from the road as we're traveling now to Coquille, Oregon. We made a stop in Dexter, Oregon, and got video footage of Rick Valley at Lost Valley Educational Center. Anyway, I'm Jocelyn Campbell of jocelynsevents.com. And Paul Wheaton also has Paul Wheaton 12, a YouTube channel where he's got over 80 YouTube videos. So we're doing podcast number 4.
Is it number 4? I'm glad you're keeping track, because I already forgot.
Well, you're driving, so you're entitled to not have your full wits about you. So I'm trying to help fill in the gaps while you're driving.
This is a demonstration of your awesome accounting skills. You can count to 4. I went 1, 2, many.
Okay. As we've mentioned at each of these podcasts, we're taking suggestions for podcasts out at the Tinkering Forum at Permes.com. And we're requesting links to the different Paul's different stuff to help spread the word about living more sustainably, living more frugally, living more self-sufficiently. And today's topic is...
Diatomaceous Earth. So that would be the link for today too, that I want to get people to do. And when we ask for a link, maybe we, you know, it's like if you've got a blog or a website, that's the best. But if you don't have that, getting a link onto a forum is probably the next best. And then after that, putting it on your Facebook wall thing, that's probably. But really, you know, a link from anywhere that you might have access to on the mighty internet, that is just grand. But that's the thing we're looking for. Diatomaceous Earth, though, today. Oh, and I should say, the link should say Diatomaceous Earth. And, of course, if you go to richsoil.com, you can, you know, get the exact spelling. And then it should link to the article, which I believe is http://www.richsoil.com/diatomaceous-earth.jsp, I think.
Okay. And... we're going to talk about what diatomaceous earth is. It doesn't look very earthy. It's a white powder. It looks more like flour almost.
Yeah, it's kind of off-white. And it has a weird texture to it. Like if you stick your hand in a flour, actually, you know, it is really kind of similar to flour. Probably a little bit more, feels a little more sticky, a little bit more scratchy than flour. When you rub it between your fingers.
So we're going to, as we were reviewing the different key points, Paul has a very thorough article out on richsoil.com about the uses and what it is, and we're going to just briefly touch on most of those in today's podcast. And as we were making the list, Paul was wrapping up the list by saying he thought no homestead should be without it.
Right. I think every homestead needs to have at least 10 to maybe even 50 pounds of diatomaceous earth on hand at any given time. And, you know, the stuff is already millions of years old, so it's not like you have to worry about it spoiling or anything. I know that here in the Pacific Northwest, the place I like to get it is from Azure Standard. But I mean, like, a lot of people, they might not know about Azure, or they might find it a little wonky to try that out. I've got a new source for years now. I've had a link to some stuff that I found out was really good on Amazon, and the links are in the article. But just a few days ago, I got a new source, and we'll talk more about that later as we get into the talking about the crystalline silica content and stuff. I think that the place to really start with it, though, is, why the hell do you want it at all? And I'd say the number one reason to have it is that it's a general insect control that you can eat. And in fact, you do eat it. Anybody who eats grain eats it. It might even, like, be in other foods, too. But in the old and moldy days, they used to stick these nasty pesticides in with the grains that they'd store in the grain silos. I know, because I used to drive the wheat trucks, and as we would drop off our load, these guys would throw this smelly pink stuff in. And now they've gotten rid of that, and they use diatomaceous earth. And so then diatomaceous earth is far more effective than any other insecticide because they can't build resistance to it. The way that diatomaceous earth works is that, and in fact, this part I've heard from so many different sources, so many different things, but I believe it actually does two different things. So I'm going to go with what I think it does. And that is that it's actually kind of sharp for insects. For us, it's totally fine. But for insects, it's kind of sharp, and it actually cuts, and it gets caught between the joints of their exoskeleton and cuts in more. It also helps to kind of scratch off. It's kind of abrasive, so it helps to scratch off their waxy outside coating. And then since it's a desiccant, meaning that it dries things out, it actually kind of turns bugs into little bug jerky. So they're all dried out and crispy inside. And then, because most of the water, their water needs are met through humidity in the air, and this thing kind of screws that all up. So I'd say its primary function is as a general insect killer. I don't even want to use the word insecticide, because it's not a chemical at all. And to me, when I hear the word insecticide, I think chemical.
So if we eat it in grain, why do we end up eating it in grain?
Well, so now when we go in and we take the grain to the grain silo, they dump gobs of it in with the grain. And so it's already there. But there's also different grades of diatomaceous earth. And of course, the stuff that they dump into the food is food grade diatomaceous earth. And so that's a grade of diatomaceous earth that has a very low crystalline silica content. To qualify as food grade, I'm pretty sure it has to have less than 1% of crystalline silica. A lot of people are familiar with the stuff, the diatomaceous earth that's used for swimming pools as a filter. And that stuff's been baked. And when it does that, it turns it to like 70% crystalline silica. And now that stuff is dangerous. If you powder the air with it, start, you know, breathing it in, it could lead to cancer and other problems. So don't be fooling with that stuff. Don't touch that. In fact, the Amazon links that I have are to diatomaceous earth that has a content of crystalline silica at 0.5%. And I tried to talk to the manufacturers a little bit about their crystalline silica content level, and I really didn't get very far. So I just kind of let it go. You know, 0.5%, that was the best I could find anywhere on the internet by far. I mean, I was finding a lot of 1%, so there's only like one place where it's 0.5. So it's like, well, you know, okay, I was kind of hoping for something even lower, but oh well. Then, a few days ago, I found a source where I visited with a guy on the phone for a while, and he was saying that they guarantee it to be less than 0.5%, and they're usually at 0.1 to 0.2%. So he and I talked at great length about the different diatomaceous earth mines and how this stuff was by far the best in the world. There is no better. And I think a lot of his business is with people who buy it, and they intentionally eat like cups of it, like not just like, oh, it ends up being in their grains or something, but like they actually like, oh, I'm going to eat a third of a cup of it today. I want to eat a third of a cup per meal today. And I mean, like, they ingest large quantities of it. And I've heard of this, and it's very popular among the crowd where it's like they're really bonkers about longevity. Like, they want to live to be more than 100 years old, and they eat a lot of this stuff. And I have tried to read it several times, and I think it has something to do with it having the right kind of silica in it, and it's like a building block for, you know, cells and bones and all kinds of things, and it's a critical component. It's like this really good diatomaceous earth apparently is like just the right stuff.
Yeah, and that's not really what your article on rich soils about. Isn't about people use of it, even though, you know, that's the kind of diatomaceous earth. Sometimes you call it DE for short. Is the kind that is the food grade and that people could eat, but you're recommending using it to help get rid of pests, right?
Dominantly, yes. And my point in going down that path was to make it clear how safe it is. I mean, you know, that it's actually has a variety of health benefits for mammals, while it's horribly deadly to insects. One of the people at Permies.com took some diatomaceous earth and put it into a jar along with some fleas, and the fleas were dead in minutes. And this reminds me, before I forget, one of the important things when you use DE is use lots of it. Use gobs. Don't be bashful. Don't be shy. In fact, my article, Ants and Aphids on My Apple Tree, I started off trying to use DE, and it wasn't effective, so I tried a bunch of other things, and then I ended up coming back to the DE, and then I used lots of it, and then it worked great. And the thing is, you can get like a 50-pound sack if you go to the right source. Like, if you go to Azure Standard, I think a 50-pound sack is something like $15.
And I just want to interject that it's such a fine, light powder that 50 pounds is a lot.
Yeah, yeah. I think if any of you get some, you should probably get 10 pounds. Don't fool around with the 5-pound stuff. Get 10 pounds. It lasts forever. But I imagine that once you, if you've got a homestead, if you've got 20 acres, you start using this stuff, I think that you're going to end up burning through 10 pounds in a year or so, maybe 2 years, and you will be really glad that you got it. I know that a lot of farmers will feed it to their animals as a form of parasite control, and which has always kind of bothered me a little bit, because I kind of think, well, the key is that once it gets wet, it doesn't work. You got to keep it dry for it to be effective, and then how can it be effective then if it's inside the gut of an animal? And so I don't fully understand that. However, boy, people have been reporting awesome stuff with it, and like the animals just become phenomenally healthy after being a little on the ill side, feeding it to them, and they're also doing fecal parasite counts. And they're showing dramatic improvements, you know. So it's definitely worth it. Now, I did after writing the article, I did get a copy of the book, the Diatomaceous Earth book by Tui Rose, and I read it. And wow, not only did it confirm everything that I'd researched for years, But it went into a lot of detail of a lot of other stuff that I never even knew about diatomaceous earth. It's being used as a cleaner, as an abrasive agent, is amazing. As a body talc kind of a thing, apparently it does amazing things when you powder yourself with it when you're having certain kinds of issues. The list just goes on and on. This stuff is like I don't know. I want to say it's like the miracle thing of some kind. I don't know how to express that. I do think it's like, I know that for a lot of problems on the farm, the first thing that pops into my head is, I bet diatomaceous earth will fix it. It's like duct tape. That's what it is. You know, it ought to be on the Red Green Show.
There you go.
Yeah, duct tape. If the women, what is it, if they don't find you handsome, they should at least find you handy. And so that means you better have some diatomaceous earth with you. Yeah.
So it's effective against fleas and aphids. You mentioned that, right?
Oh, yeah. And, well, not aphids. I don't know about anything about it. Ants, though. Because it was ants. Because with ants and aphids, the ants basically herd the aphids.
Right.
And then if you've got like an aphid, something that eats aphids, you can't get it anywhere near the aphids until you get rid of the ants. So really, usually what happens is that if you just get rid of the ants, then the aphids will go away because the aphids' natural predators will come in because, you know, those aphids, they're sucking the sugar out of the plant, and so they taste like little pieces of candy.
Yeah.
So then along come all these, like ladybugs, they love candy. They'll eat aphids like crazy. But bed bugs, nothing works better against bed bugs than diatomaceous earth. Nothing. Nothing comes close. And for fleas, I've got my big flea control article. Nothing works as good as diatomaceous earth in fighting fleas. There are a couple of things that have been very, very interesting, and I'd like to conduct more experiments, and they could be more fun, more scientifically cool than diatomaceous earth. Because diatomaceous earth, you got to leave it on for a while with fleas. You've got to outlast their life cycle, but for the most part, diatomaceous earth is a number one. Grasshoppers, in fact, it's great for a chicken's dust bath because chickens get mites on them, and then they'll give themselves dust baths to get the mites off of them. So diatomaceous earth inside where the dust is for their dust baths, that's awesome stuff. That really helps them a lot.
You know, I use diatomaceous earth to get rid of ants in my kitchen because I had tried what I thought were the less toxic ant traps. They were borax ant traps. And I swear the ants were just eating that and having fun. I don't know. The borax wasn't doing anything. And I also moved a flower pot outside my kitchen window, and the ant hill was under the flower pot, and I saw the woodpeckers come and eat all the ants, but I still had ants in my kitchen. Until I put diatomaceous earth around the edges of the floorboards where they were coming in, and I haven't had them since.
I think an important thing with diatomaceous earth, and it's with borax too. Now, I would not use borax for a lot of these situations. So I think borax is a useful tool for the toolbox, but when it comes to insect control, borax is almost never the solution. Diatomaceous earth is almost always better. And you know, borax is toxic. It's just a low toxic thing, a low toxicity item. But in this case, it's almost always used incorrectly. It's always used in a way where you get to experience the toxicity of it. Don't do it. Stay away. Diatomaceous earth and borax both are generally used by folks in an incorrect way. The correct way is to keep in mind that it's not a bait. The insects don't like it and they will avoid it. And so as opposed to a bait that's like, oh, this seems like awesome stuff, give me some of that, and then it's like, you know, got some kind of toxic element to it. So for diatomaceous earth, you got to put it like for ants. If you know the path that they're on, just a little bit right where their path is will usually do the trick. You know, they put 10 steps, 15 steps into it, and they got enough on them that they're goners. And that's all you need. I mean, I've seen it a couple of times. I've fiddled with it a couple of times. When I see ants in an area, I just put a little bit down in that little area, and they're gone within an hour. But it's not like you put it someplace and hope that they'll come to it. You've got to get it on them, and make sure that they get it on them.
Yeah, you told me about that experiment someone on permies.com did with putting the fleas in a jar. And I'd been using diatomaceous earth in my place for fleas, not very successfully because I wasn't consistent enough with it. And so I put some fleas in a jar with diatomaceous earth, but I had diatomaceous across half of the bottom of the jar, half with the DE on the bottom, half totally clear. And the fleas did stay away from the DE, and they stayed hopping around on the clear side of the jar just fine for a while. It wasn't until you made them go through the DE that then they were dead. And they were dead almost instantly after getting in the DE. But it made a big difference. You had to have the whole surface covered of where they were going to go instead of just hoping they'd fall in it.
Yeah, you know, with the flea stuff that you had at your house, that was a long road, but they are gone.
Yes.
And I do think it was a big part of the DE, but you were uncomfortable with the idea of, like, going full DE. And so it's like, all right, we won't do that. And so it was just slower. It was really slow. It was months. You know, but then it was just like all along the edges and stuff. And the thing is that, yeah, they'll, I mean, if you give them a place where they can go without it, they'll go there. They'll go hang out there instead. And you know, in time, they'll probably accidentally hop onto the DE once in a while. But you better be patient then. And they could still keep reproducing forever. But you know, that's another topic for another day, is talking about all of the flea control stuff, the flea life cycle, and things of that nature. All right, I think we've covered quite a lot here. What else is on the list there?
I think you covered just about all the other pieces you wanted to cover are the unwarranted fears with using DE, which is mostly, well, I'll let you go into that. And then also, it can clog a vacuum. And that's not a fear, that's just a mitigation.
Yeah, you're going to have a kind of, and then that's another thing too, is like for fleas at least, vacuuming them is a great way, but you got to put a little bit of diatomaceous earth in your vacuum first. But yeah, if you've got these vacuums with the fancy pants filters on them and stuff that'll filter out little teeny tiny bits, well, DE is little teeny tiny bits. So you know, it's gonna filter it, and once it filters it, and you got a whole lot of it, well, be prepared to be able to change your filter a lot. And also, you know, hopefully you've got some kind of setup where you can wash it or something like that. Because it's like, imagine what's going to happen if you spilled flour on the ground. You spilled like a couple pounds of flour, and then you took the vacuum to it. Well, it's going to also plug up your filter the same way. So then there's a lot of people that are all like, oh no, DE is dangerous. You get it into the air, and then you get it into your lungs, and you're going to die. Well, that's got a little bit of truth to it for the pool grade stuff, but not for the food grade stuff. The food grade stuff, there's people that have worked their entire lives in diatomaceous earth mines and have never had any health problems. No cancer, no nothing like that. Now, there's also people that have worked in the pool grade diatomaceous earth factories that have a lot of problems, but that's where you're taking the diatomaceous earth and you're heating it and getting more of that crystalline silica stuff.
I found one other piece in the notes. We wanted to talk about what diatomaceous earth is, and we've covered that pretty thoroughly. It's you might discuss a little bit. It's it's fossilized critters of kind, right?
Yeah, and so they're actually called diatoms. And at the bottom of my article, so there was somebody who saw the article, and she works as a scientist monkeying with diatoms and documenting them. And so she took a whole bunch of pictures of living diatoms of today. And so those are on the website. She gave me permission to post them up there. I've given her full credit. There's even a picture of her up there collecting samples. But the diatomaceous earth is actually the fossilized remains of diatoms millions of years old. And so you'll get to these places where there used to be millions of years ago lake bottoms or something, and they were just full of diatom critters, and then, you know, all the things lined up just right so that the diatoms were fossilized by the ton. And it is a limited resource, but it's, I don't know, pretty massive, my impression is, anyway.
We also wanted to talk about the different uses for diatomaceous earth, and we talked about how it's put in flowers to help kill any bugs that might get in the grain or in grain silos, so it ends up in our flour that we eat. We talked about people who actually eat it as a health thing, and we talked about using it for bugs, and we didn't talk so much about using it as a desiccant, except how that acts against bugs, but there's a homesteading use of using it as a desiccant as well.
Saving seeds. I mean, you want to keep your seeds dry, and when you store them, and so putting a little diatomaceous earth in your seed packet is very helpful. From a homesteading perspective, a lot of people will put diatomaceous earth, like they'll have a 5-gallon bucket, and they'll fill it with their home harvested grain, and they'll mix in some diatomaceous earth with the grain. I'm not sure where else on the homestead I can think of other than as insect control.
I think we've covered everything. You already, at the beginning, talked about the updated source links in your article and the places to get it so that you're getting the kind with the lowest silica.
Crystalline silica. Right. Because, you know, my understanding is that diatomaceous earth is like a major component of it is silica, but it's like the good kind. And then what you want to do is you want to minimize the bad kind, and that would be the crystalline silica. Does that make sense?
Yes, makes sense to me. So we're at about half an hour for this podcast.
So. Sweet, because, you know, the exit's not that far away. and you know, I'm worried that we're going to miss the exit, so we got to, you know, strategize around that.
Right. So this podcast is a little different. We're doing it on the road as we're visiting all kinds of cool eco people, and Paul's been driving, and I've been trying to help hold together the topics. And this was podcast number 4. Again, let us know what podcast you want to hear about out at the Tinkering Forum on permies.com. And Paul has a promotion running for people who pushed links of any of his stuff out to reddit.com. That's also...
Well, of course, you know, in theory, people are going to listen to this podcast, like, I don't know, maybe a year down the road. Uh-huh. And then, you know, when it comes, if you want to be involved in that promotion, it'll probably be over and it sucks to be you. So, you should have been here a year ago.
Sucker! Bike! Yoink!
So, I make the link to the diatomaceous earth article, please. And then if I get lots of links to my stuff, I'll be a very happy guy, and I'll make more podcasts. So I think that's it. Do you want to do the grand finale?
Uh-uh.
It's got to be me? Okay, all right. If you like this sort of thing, and I know you do, come on out to the forums at permies.com, where we talk about non-toxic techniques, homesteading, and permaculture all the time.